Welcome to Innovating Leadership, Co-Creating Our Future. I'm your host, Maureen Metcalf, founder and CEO of the Innovative Leadership Institute, where we help leaders be future ready. Helping us in this mission today is Alicia Pittman, Global People Chair of Boston Consulting Group. Alicia, we're really glad you're here with us.
Well, thank you, Maureen. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
In your role as Global People Chair, how are you seeing young workers reshaping the workplace, and what opportunities do they present for companies in terms of culture and innovation?
Well, this is one of the great honors and one of the great fun of being People Chair for Boston Consulting Group is we have so much young talent and new talent coming in every year that it really allows us to stay on the cutting edge and also really keeps us on our toes to make sure that we're staying on the cutting edge in terms of the value proposition for our talent, both existing and new people to come in. Young people and young talent are shaping corporate America globally, the corporate world, and many institutions in a number of ways. Two of them that are most exciting to me, even if they're not easy, is one, remote work and hybrid work, and really learning new ways to collaborate that are using technology, that are taking advantage of flexibility where we have it, and are pushing our boundaries in terms of what we can get done where and when. And that's not always easy. It's not easy, especially in multi-generational workforces, to kind of mold to those new ways of working. It creates challenge in a number of ways. And there's things that are really hard about hybrid work, like do we get enough apprenticeship? Do we get enough in-person learning happening? But there's also things that are really wonderful about it in terms of enabling flexibility, enabling people to live closer to family, enabling young parents to be able to manage their works and their life in a more blended way that I love. That's one of the things that is sometimes a little terrifying and actually quite exciting all at the same time. Another one certainly is the use of generative AI and technology in general, but let me talk about Gen AI specifically. BCG has been all in on generative AI because for us, it's kind of a triple word score. It like influences how our clients work and what we need to support them on. It also shapes our industry and there's offensive and defensive moves on that, but it's also a really exciting part of our core people value proposition in terms of how we train people, what skills we give them, how we equip them to do their jobs better, and how we allow them to be on the cutting edge. And that's a place where we have a lot of reverse mentorship going on. I mean, as an example, we have about 1,100 black belts across BCG who are people that are, you know, fairly new to BCG in many dimensions, but they are at the forefront, at the vanguard of learning how to use Gen AI, not just in general, but how to specifically change BCG workflows and methodologies and stuff using Gen AI. And they are, in many cases, training their partners and training their office leaders and training their seniors in how to do that themselves. And not only is it really impactful for BCG, but it's actually quite a lot of fun for everybody. And those are a couple amongst many of the places that I really see this very energizing and highly impactful way that this generation coming into the workforce is really helping reshape things.
Yeah, I was listening to an NPR story recently and coming out of consulting as one of those young people a long time ago and knowing how much we depended on the online knowledge exchange and realizing that our young folks, how much more productive they are leveraging the best-in-class research, the best deliverables, and how Gen AI will bump the productivity even significantly more. And I think the stat was like 60% more productive for young folks. And for more senior people, the productivity bump is smaller because we're leveraging our own knowledge. So AI knowledge isn't as important. Presumably, at some point, we're delivering more for the same or a lower rate.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't heard that stat before. It resonates, although I probably come at it a little differently, but it really resonates quite a bit. When we look at Gen AI specifically, we really look at kind of three different metrics or groups of metrics. We're BCG, so we look at hundreds of metrics, but the three big buckets of them are we do look at productivity, of course. We look a lot at quality. So like better insights, faster insights, you know, getting to better answers, not just doing it less expensively. And then we also look at employee joy, satisfaction. You know, we really are finding that Gen AI helps people do more of what they love. We call it sometimes less toil, more triumph, but really like spending more time on the things that gives them energy, on teaming and those sort of things and taking some of the more drudgery out of the equation. One of the things we see is that if you look at the things that Gen AI can really help deliver in terms of content creation, content review, qualitative synthesis and research, quantitative research, of course. If you look at the activity set of more junior staff versus more senior staff, there's more time in the day that the junior staff is doing things where Gen AI is applicable versus the more senior staff who's spending more time in meetings and influence and things like that, that use all of those things that the junior staff are creating. But if you just look at like the percentage of time of tasks that more junior people can use on Gen AI, it is greater. So we do see that difference in impact. The other thing, though, that I think is really exciting in terms of one of the ways we see Gen AI changing the workforce, we call it an exoskeleton. And we did some research on this, which basically shows that because Gen AI could equip people who aren't coders to do things that are reasonably sophisticated coding and things of that nature, it really can equip our people to do things that they didn't think they could do, that they didn't think they had the skill set to have. Now, it doesn't make them experts in all of those domains. We still need the experts, those senior people, to your point, to actually do the quality checking and do some of the coaching and things like that along the way. But that power to unlock, and I really like that exoskeleton. It reminds me of like Iron Man or something. I mean, it feels like it really is a superpower that we really are equipping people. At BCG, at our heart, has always been about development and about equipping people to do things that they didn't think they could do. And that's certainly something that's been true for me in my career and one of the reasons I've stayed at BCG as long as I have. But we have like a whole new set of gears now to deliver that to people with this exoskeleton concept. And I think it's really quite exciting.
I love the exoskeleton concept. Can you give an example specifically about how that's worked and impacted either a client team or your client?
Yes. And I knew you were going to ask that. And I have to think of more examples. So when we think about the examples, and a lot of the research we've done has been on things like coding and advanced analysis and things like that, that are quite easy to measure versus a control set and things like that. But other examples where I see it happening, and actually it was quite interesting. I got the opportunity this week to be at the OpenAI headquarters, and we were doing a sharing session because of our partnership with them around how we're using Gen AI. And we had this great, we called it the AI Olympics. And we had 1,100 people across BCG submit ideas of how they were using or thought they might be able to use Gen AI in their work. We chose 4 finalists and we took them to the OpenAI headquarters and kind of Shark Tank style, they gave all of their ideas, which was, I mean, amazing. It was well worth my 16-hour trip from Washington, D.C. to the West Coast to do this. And you saw all sorts of different interesting examples of this exoskeleton concept. One of them that I thought was most interesting is we had a team that really decided to rethink how workshops get done, right? And in some ways, that seems very boring, but we all know that actually in most big organizations, there's a lot of workshops and a lot of working sessions, and some of them are a lot of fun and some of them are kind of snooze fests. More importantly, back to the quality point we were making before, the quality of outcomes of those workshops can really be quite different depending on, is there a group thing? People kind of bored? Do you settle into like one easy answer or do you have real debate? Are you able to bring new ideas to the table? And so one of the things that this team did, which I thought was super interesting, was they created Gen AI as an exoskeleton to this whole workshop so that as they were having debates about what are new growth vectors for this client they were supporting, they were able to bring in real-time new research on as things got prioritized, they could send the group out and say, okay, we're going to do real-time research to bring in new ideas to push this further much faster so that something that might have been something that you took 3 weeks to like, okay, we're going to go back, we're going to do some research, we're going to bring it back in a meeting when we can organize it 3 weeks later. They actually did this real time during the meeting and it totally changed the outcome. And I mean, to give you an idea, over the course of several months, they were able to identify with this team what the new growth vector was, launch it so much that it was actually getting press attention. And so there were like newspaper quotes about what this new growth vector was going to be. And this was actually in a regulated industry, not one that is known for speed. I thought that was a super interesting example, not just on an individual level of this exoskeleton, but actually as a group level on this exoskeleton that really kind of is game changing. And we're just scratching the surface on those sort of things. And there's lots of other examples of the exoskeleton, particularly on creative concepts for individuals, like being able to create video when you didn't think you could, you know, when you didn't have that tool set, being able to create graphics. I've used that actually quite a bit myself. I am not an artist, but I know the power of words. And so often I will go into ChatGPT as an example, and where I have an idea for something I want to communicate, I have ChatGPT create a visual for me. And that's the whole slide. That's the whole communication to do my talking point. I certainly couldn't have drawn that up, right? There's a lot of ways, particularly bringing together the qualitative and quantitative, that I think are quite powerful.
I love the workshop piece because we work with clients similarly. I do remember being in a group where they were dealing with a specific case of a challenge. We had just launched ChatGPT. We're just talking about it. And they immediately got on and started looking for best solutions, describing this very meticulous example. And so they were learning prompting, but they were also seeing how they could in real time deal differently with a complex situation.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious from your perspective, you know, you spend so much time thinking about leadership and leaders specifically. Do you see ways that Gen AI is really impacting how people need to lead or the specific task of leadership in different ways?
We wrote a book on leadership and followership in the age of AI.
Glad I asked.
We wrote this specifically because I wanted to answer for myself and for my clients with all of the things that we're automating. Where can we leverage humans, my unique talents, your unique talents, so that we stay relevant and so our organizations can go forward effectively? So I came up with a top 10. First of all, we need to communicate with each other, interact more, because the work we're doing is more complex, so the communication is more important. Growth mindset, adaptiveness, emotional intelligence. This next one is but abundance mindset, staying out of fear, recognizing that we can think our way through the challenges we have. Domain expertise, I need to know my work. Analytics, decision-making, and systems thinking. I have to be guiding the AI tools I'm using to be comprehensive in the solutions, creativity, and then risk awareness.
Those are great. I mean, I know you said you were careful about the wording, but I loved that concept of an abundance mindset because we all live in the real world. That world is resource constrained and all of those sort of things. But while the resources might be fixed, our ability to leverage those resources for higher impact changes all of the time with technology. And so there's a tremendous amount of optimism in what you said about an abundance mindset. I love that because I think that's part of why Gen AI is so exciting, is because it really is unlocking a new gear in terms of what we can get out of our work processes, out of talent, out of human collaboration. I'm going to use that. If that's okay, I'm going to steal that one.
Well, and so as we're talking about this, there's some research that comes out of Harvard on harmonic vibrancy, and specifically the idea that we can look at, we've got a set of resources and we do what we do. But then talking about looking at the work like you're looking at it, we're continually developing resources and developing our people to meet a vision of a very different future. So we're looking at what's possible, we're developing resources, and we're leveraging what we have responsibly. And the research would say that view that you take really produces the optimal results with humans and machines.
Yeah.
And presumably you expect more of your people than probably an average company.
Yes. Yes, we expect a lot of our people, and our people come to BCG because they expect us to really unlock their potential. That is our purpose, and that is our promise to them as well. I think this concept is so interesting. I mean, one of the things that we, obviously, you would expect, spend a lot of time on is teaming. So we have a whole function called teaming at BCG, and that's really about how do we get the most out of teams. And one, because that is where the magic happens and how all of these things come together. It's also because that's what gives people delight and joy and a sense of community and all of those things. And I think we're really entering a time now in, we can call it leadership, we could call it workforce, we could call it a lot of different things, but I think we're entering a time period now where technology is becoming a core component of that team, you know, and we see that conceptually in how we can each get more out of ourselves and things like that, so we can each contribute more to the team. But I think we're also, I mean, seeing that even as technology actually playing a role. I mean, one of the things that we've done a ton of at BCG in terms of using Gen AI is we've created a lot of custom GPTs, which are, you know, essentially agents to do specific things. And one of the things that our case teams have done quite a lot of is they have created these case team agents, what we call them, which basically are memories of key documents for that are relevant for that case. It's a way to bring together all of the different work that's, you know, maybe happening across 5 people, maybe happening across 70 people in some cases and more, depending. One of the things I loved is one of my teams named that agent after the founder of the company that we were serving, right? So we gave him a human name. It's incredible what that unlocks. And it unlocks a lot of time and speed, because you can real time and intuitively query what all of your colleagues are doing to bring that in and learn it quickly, versus, you know, who do I talk to? And then can I set up a call with them in 2 hours? And, you know, all of the time you lose and that sort of thing. You can actually get to it real time. And you don't really have to know who to ask or what to ask. You can explore, which is super cool. I've also found it, and this is one of the things that is really important to me, is it's an incredible confidence builder, especially for our newest people, whether they're new to BCG or whether they're new to a topic or new to a client. I hear again and again, wow, I went into that meeting and I really was not nearly as worried as I might have been about what I didn't know, because I had the opportunity to explore it and actually come in quite more prepared. And that's showing up sometimes and, you know, being able to connect dots in ways that they wouldn't have real time during the meeting, but also sometimes just in walking in, standing a little taller, shoulders a little more square, and just saying like, I know this, right? And so we talk about AI sometimes as your ally, your partner in crime, so to speak, in really equipping you to do what you came to do. I think that's a super cool part. So I really am interested in how we increasingly see technology as part of the team, not just something the team leverages outside.
I love the case agent idea, because as a new consultant a long time ago at Accenture, we would go through project files to see how other people did deliverables. But as a new person, I didn't know which ones were the best ones and which ones were the worst ones. So that confidence bit, it took a long time. I eventually figured out which managers or engagement people were better than others, but the learning curve was much steeper. And I didn't always walk in with confidence. What's available now, as you're describing it, is exponentially better for the consultants and the clients.
Yeah. There's a lot of knowledge transfer. But I mean, just to make it really real, because I've certainly had the same experience in my first days and months and years at BCG, is, you know, sometimes you only have enough time to read the things, to know enough that there's a lot out there that you don't know yet. And actually to be able to speed up going through all of those things and being able to do it real time. You know, I'm sure you have this experience as I had, which is like you start something, you read 1,000 things, you don't really know which ones are relevant. And then you hope a week later that you remember like, okay, which document was that in or whatever. And you and I probably started our careers when it wasn't even that easy to query inside documents and pull them up. It's such a game changer. It's really quite exciting. And it goes back to this idea of abundance. You know, there's an abundance of information out there. There's an abundance of resources for us to draw on. And when technology enables us to more quickly, efficiently, productively draw on all of those resources, it really changes the game in terms of what each of us and what we can collectively as teams accomplish.
Back to the idea that then our teams are much happier. Those days of reading 1,000 pages, I got a lot smarter, yes. But I don't think I loved those days. C-suite transformation is becoming increasingly challenging. What advice would you give to leaders who are grappling with the fast pace of managing multiple generations in a workforce? What has to change about cultures to accommodate just that, along with all of the other people and business challenges?
I wear two hats at BCG. I am our people chair, but I also am a client service officer, primarily in transformation. And that's what I love, and it's what gives me a lot of energy. But man, is it hard. And it's really gotten hard in some exponential and measurable ways. I think one of the reasons that it is harder, it is objectively faster paced, right? I mean, you can see the half-life of market leadership is just much, much shorter than it used to be. And that's, I think, quite staggering for leaders to keep up with. And for reasons good and bad, the demands of talent have become much higher. And I think most of those things are good. I mean, I think when talent demands more, we also get more out of talent. So I tend to be glass half full on that topic. But the importance of not just bringing people along from a management point of view, but bringing people along emotionally, which is like, why do they want to get on board with this change? Why do they want to start moving faster than they had to? Really is a pretty high bar for leaders as well. And in part, I think that is because of what talent demands. You know, it's a little less hierarchical, it's a little more self-motivation driven and things like that. But I think it's also because the challenges of today's business more and more require real agility in working cross-functionally and using technology. And the days when, you know, anybody could really just kind of stay in their lane and actually expect to get to the outcomes they want, I think those are long behind us. And so there's a real practical reason that you need to bring people along emotionally as well. I could go on for hours about what I think is important in transformation. And we have 700-page playbooks on it as well. But I would really focus on two things. I would really focus on, one, this people component. Make the emotional case for change. Bring people along, not just because you need to, but because you'll be glad that you did, because you will get more creativity, you will get faster results, and you will get a set of inputs that leadership alone could have never come up with. Really making that emotional case for change, bringing the organization along is super critical. And by the way, more fun. It just is. It's work, but it's more fun. And then the other thing that I think is so important for C-suite leadership driving through transformation is to be more and more externally focused. And that means not just bringing in expertise that they might need. That's always been important and that continues to be important when you're driving change. But it also means like really being attuned to what is changing in the business environment around you. I find that on average, most leadership teams are to a varying degree, but often at least 3 months, if not more often, 6 to 9 months slow in actually realizing the changes that are going in their market around them. Even when they can see it in the data and things like that, really when they drive it into their actions is usually lagging by a few quarters. And some of that is wise because you want to watch for a little bit and make sure you really know the direction of travel before you start reacting. You don't want to zigzag left and right all the time. But sometimes it's just because the faint signals remain faint until they're inescapable. And I actually think that if leaders can be more attuned to how things are changing, get more ahead of what faint signals am I seeing and how am I starting to move to be able to react to those sooner, they'll be able to compete with and be up to the challenge of the faster and faster cycles of market leadership and innovation. So those would be the two big ones I'd focus on.
So I'm curious about the trends, mainly because I am a bit maniacal about following them. There's a mindset and a choice of action. So the mindset that I care about them, but then the choice of action, we're all looking at a long to-do list. And at what point do I say, I'm going to read an article or jump into a podcast about a trend versus doing a deliverable? How do we help make those decisions? Because even if I want to, how am I balancing all the other stuff?
Maureen, the challenges that you raise, they're real, right? And they're the real day-to-day things that each of us kind of grapples with. So when I think for myself about what I try to balance, and I don't always get it perfectly, but also what advice I give my teams and my clients and things like that, I would say three things. One is really thinking about how much time you're spending listening versus talking. Are you taking in those signals? Are you taking in that information? And I don't mean just how much you're spending your time, but like how much are you absorbing what you hear versus thinking about how you're going to respond? Because so much of it's missed, not because you didn't actually have access to the information, but just because you weren't in a headspace to absorb it. Another piece is, and this can be a little controversial at times, but people are constantly talking about how do I shorten my priority list? How do I streamline my priority list to get through it? And that's, of course, important. But I also sometimes like to think, look, the fastest way to shorten your priority list is actually to move through your priorities, to change the rate at which you're moving through things. And so I often suggest and try to do myself that we ask the question of how often is what I'm doing as a leader, as a manager, speeding up outcomes versus slowing people down. And sometimes you ask questions that deliberately slow people down, but sometimes you have to look for those opportunities, which is, can I just move this forward 2 weeks? Can I cut out a bunch of work because I know what it's going to say? So I think that's another thing that helps you get through that priority list faster. And then the other thing, which is very tactical, but something I remind myself of quite a bit, is each of us as leaders and as managers has a set of things that we're really good at and probably better than our teams are because we've been doing it for longer. But those are not the things that we can uniquely do. And so how do I spend my time on the things that I can uniquely do and I'm uniquely responsible for as the leader of our team versus how much of my time am I spending on things that I'm good at and I can be helpful, but actually my team can do 90% as well. This is maybe the old example of just comparative advantage and Abraham Lincoln typing faster than his assistant, right? I'm not sure that's exactly the right analogy, but this point about making sure that you're, as a leader, doing things that you can uniquely do, even if you kind of get some joy sometimes out of doing stuff that's from your old job that your team can also do, is, I think, a way to rebalance some of that.
Yeah, I think I would trade off the joy I get in doing a task for just not having to do the task.
Yes.
So let's go back to transformation. You talked about the people side. We've talked about Gen AI taking over some tasks. Is there some kind of general guidance that you would give most clients?
Yes, there's a whole spectrum of things. There's a large set of pressures. They seem never ending. Many of them are new. You know, I would add to that, you know, how do you think about social media in the workplace? How do you, I mean, there's just so many big things out there, mental health crisis, and how does that manifest in the workplace and all those sort of things. So that's unending. So the first thing I would say is people should give themselves some grace. I mean, it is an overwhelming load and some people are paralyzed by it, or some people spend time beating themselves up because they can't possibly do it all. There's a little bit of that, but I think giving yourself grace to not have to solve every problem all at once is important. But the second thing also is, like, there's empirical proof that there are things that can enable organizations to manage more things at once. One of those things is that you need to be long-term focused and future focused, as you said, which we talked about a couple minutes ago. But you can see empirically in the data that organizations which are more future focused in their transformations are more successful. They hit their growth outcomes more often. They hit their cost outcomes. They're less likely to go over budget on doing it and all of those sort of things. And making sure that you're doing the things that are important, not just now, but also for the future, really helps. The other thing is, whereas we have amazing sets of collaboration across most organizations, there is also a lot of time and rework. And this goes back to something that you said before, which I loved, about this idea of abundance and actually having an abundance mindset. There is just no doubt that in the crush of people trying to coordinate and who needs to be in what meeting and all of this sort of things, there is a lot lost in translation. There's a lot of time spent either not on the right things or a couple teams going in different directions and then having to come back and put their notes together and then actually reset some assumptions and move forward again. There are ways that you can use some really tried and true methodologies of deciding what decisions need to be made, what assumptions need to be put in, and that sort of thing, which actually drastically takes down some of that rework and does it. And then the other thing, which again is pretty practical, but I think quite revolutionary for a lot of organizations, is a lot of organizations go about prioritizing these things by putting a set of resources against them and then seeing what those resources can go do. Actually, we find, and again, you can sort of see this in the data, that when teams actually put a value case in front before they resource, you get a lot more outcomes out of those teams. And it means two things. I mean, one, it means, like, let's make sure this is big enough to go after. It also means, how do we make sure that the aspiration, if we're going to resource this, that the aspiration is big enough to justify those resources? And often, frankly, it allows organizations to put more resource towards the things that really matter to accelerate them most. And in some ways, it feels very intuitive to say, hey, I should know what I'm going after before I decide how to resource it. But it's not in practice how most organizations work. And setting up, as example, transformation offices that help create that discipline can really change the game in creating a multiplier effect on how much resource you actually have. And so that's kind of way tactical versus the crushing intellectual challenge of how do I take on all of these things. But I think the good news in all of that is, like, there are tried and true management practices that actually enable you to work through it. They're not the ones that are intuitive to many organizations, but they are very coachable and repeatable once you get them right.
You know, as you say that, I'm thinking of basic project scoping. And we tell our clients to do this, and yet we don't always do it. And when we do it, it absolutely makes sense. Yet for us, it's not that we don't have the capacity to do it. We just don't always have the will.
That's a pretty big piece of our business, and my personal business is on transformations. And so it really is about exactly what you said, which is creating more capacity to move through all of these things. And so it is about doing the good old-fashioned project scoping to make sure that, you know, everybody's really focused on the goal. It's about being really deliberate in how and when you resource different things. It's about having the connectivity between the teams so that you reduce some of that rework and everybody can see the bigger picture. But a lot of it is around using tools that actually enable people to take on more. And so you talk about how much can humans absorb. Well, we do see that, like, humans can only absorb so much. But to be honest, when they feel like they're having impact, when they feel like they're learning, when they feel like what they're doing matters, they can actually absorb more. They take on more work, they're more motivated and all of those sort of things, right? So there is real value in that. We also, and I talked about this a little earlier, we also look at that emotional case for change, right? How do you actually get people excited about what they're doing, and also just help connect? Because some people will be very taken by the data and the financial numbers of what needs to be done. Others will be taken very much by the strategic logic, but others need to feel it. They need to feel it inside of them. Like, why is this better for me as a human being? Why is this exciting? And I would say most of us, depending on how we feel in any given day, need probably some combination of all three of those things and kind of fuel our motivation as well. And so those are some of the, you know, practices that we help our clients put in place to work through those many, many priorities.
And helping people navigate the feelings is the hardest part. It's a much easier to put together a business case than
yes.
help a diverse group of people who are going to feel good about different things.
Yes. Maureen, I think this is one of the most interesting things because often that's the piece that gets left out. This is actually something I've really learned. We have a team within BCG called Bright House. And Bright House really is our purpose-driven creative piece of BCG that creates human-connected storylines. It helps excavate purpose in organizations and in efforts. And they do everything from really high-impact marketing campaigns to supporting the change management of these sort of transformations. And I've been a client of theirs many times in my people role inside of BCG. You know, I, of course, leverage them as well. The ability that I've seen of that team to just communicate things in ways that I could never communicate through a slide or, you know, an outline set of things that kind of draw people back to this is the very rigorous logic I have of why we need to do this. And they will make it fun. They'll make it human. They'll make it emotional in a way that just unlocks a whole different gear for what we're trying to do. And so I really do think that part is so important. And it's funny because I find that as much as the soft side of change is so critical for actual results in business, many leaders feel like it's indulgent, right? They feel like, oh, I'm cheating a little bit because this is fun or this is soft or do I really need to do this? And what about getting back to the business case? What about getting back to the numbers? And they feel guilt about it. But in fact, it is what makes the difference. And I think that's, you know, something I always strive to help our clients with.
Connected to that, you talk about DE&I and helping people feel like they're doing meaningful and impactful work. Can you say a little bit about what you do? Because you're recruiting the top talent across industries, across age groups, out of universities, or out of industry. And having the right work environment is crucial to get that talent.
We could do a whole podcast just on inclusion. I will try to keep it brief, but this is such an important topic for us. And it's important for a few reasons. One is because it's core to our values, I believe. Two, because we know that diversity and inclusion produces better answers. I mean, BCG's clients hire us to answer the hardest questions, right? They're once in a generation type questions. And that requires creativity and perspective and all of this that we know only comes when you have diverse teams. And also, frankly, there's some pretty basic math behind some of this for BCG as well. I mean, we grow roughly 10 times faster than our core talent pools. And so if we're not able to get a diverse set of talent into BCG and create an inclusive environment where they can all thrive, like we just can't hire at the quality and the rate that we need to, right? So there's like very basic algorithms and math that comes behind that as well. What we also know, and we've done lots and lots of research here, what we also know is that an inclusive environment helps everybody be their best. And showing up as your authentic self, whether you're part of a diversity group, whether you are not, actually helps everybody. And it really helps employers in terms of retention and development and all of the things that we strive so hard for. So we really have that at the core of our people promise and our people agenda in so many ways. And it takes a lot of forms in terms of education and awareness, which is a constant, in terms of structural interventions where we need them, in terms of training leaders to be more inclusive, you know, making sure that all of our people practices are inclusive, and also in creating really fantastic communities within BCG and our employee resource groups to make sure that we're fueling the energy and the connectivity and the learning that happens within those teams. So this is one of my favorite parts of my job. I led women at BCG for North America before I took on broader people roles. And so it's something very near and dear to my heart, but it's also at the heart of our business model as well.
I love the structure you put behind it because often people say the words and then there is no corresponding structure. And I assume also performance management, that you're expected to do this and we measure how much you do and that impacts your comp.
You know, an organization like BCG, apprenticeship is a big part of what we expect from all of our leaders. That's what makes our business model work. It's part of our promise of what makes people come to BCG is that apprenticeship they're going to get. And more, it's important that apprenticeship is not just about being a good mentor to people who look just like you, but actually you need to be a great mentor and really be able to apprentice for people of a variety of backgrounds, communication styles, skill sets, You know, and that's true when we look at a classic DEI type lens, but it's also true. I mean, BCG has on our team now climate scientists and data architects and engineers and all sorts of different career paths. And our leaders need to be able to create teams that are not just other business analysts that look like them, but actually taking in this wide set of skills. And so it really does up the demands, I think in some exciting ways, but it's no doubt in more demanding ways about our leaders to be really great at creating an inclusive environment in their teams and investing in developing a broader set of people.
Alicia, thank you. I wish we could talk for hours more. Unfortunately, that's not an option today. But thank you for sharing your really deep insights with our listeners and with me. How would people find out more about what you're doing? And I assume BCG.com is the public facing, but how would other leaders learn more about you?
Maureen, first of all, this was so much fun for me. Thank you for inviting me to be with you today. I learned quite a bit and I wrote down a few notes for myself that I'm going to do some more research on afterwards. These are topics that I'm really passionate about. And so I appreciate the opportunity to share and I've learned a lot from you. There's lots of ways to find out if people are interested more about BCG. Certainly BCG.com is a great way to do it. But there's also between current BCG employees and BCG alums out there, there's tens of thousands of people who can tell you more about BCG. But also we really are out there in the world, at our clients, in big forums, on campuses. And I really invite any of your listeners to find out more about BCG and seek us out where we are. We also have, you know, good old-fashioned LinkedIn accounts and things like that. So there's lots of resource there. Now, BCG is a community at our heart, and we love to engage. And so I also invite people to engage with more BCGers.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure to talk to you. And I hope we get to do this again.
I would love that.
Hi, I'm Raghav Raj. I'm the student intern here at 90.5 WCBE. Did you know that you can tune into this show on WCBE's new app? Whether you're on the go or staying home, the WCBE app lets you listen to our programming online, anytime. For local music, community news, and original podcasts, find WCBE on the App Store or the Google Play Store today.
David Brown formed Harmony Project in Columbus in 2009 to build a stronger, more inclusive community through music and service. An initial chorus of 100 people has grown to more than 1,000, with Brown taking his concept into schools and prisons to share what music gave him.
Music was where I was not excluded. Music was where I could close my door and I could imagine an audience in front of me and singing and dancing and having a great time. That just became the natural salvation. Like if you lead with, come sing, even if you've been told you can't. Come sing if you want your voice to be part of something greater. Come sing if you know that you would never be able to be on a stage or never be able to back up some big artist. Come sing with me. Harmony allows every single person who participates to be a part of something greater than themselves.
Music Journeys features the inspirational David Brown and Harmony Project. Listen to Music Journeys on the major podcast platforms, the WCBE app, and at WCBE.org.